Coming up, how to determine your next career move. And then the secret overemployment trend continues to grow. And you know I'm going to coach you up. If you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go. Coaching you to have the competitive edge to win in your work so that you can win in your life. More money, more meaning, more income, more impact. That is our focus. So it was, 15 years ago, I was in a season of confusion, a season of discouragement. I knew only one thing, that I wasn't where I wanted to be. And yet I had no idea where I wanted to go. Now, you want to talk about just a sucky place to be, that's it. I'm not where I want to be, but I couldn't give myself a clear alternative. I could not envision a clear alternative. It was just, I know I'm not on the path that I want to be on. And really what made it worse was that I had envisioned this path that I was on. I was languishing, not moving forward as fast as I should be, because I had kind of lied to myself and did not come to grips with the fact that I had been on a path for a while that I didn't want to be on, and I just kind of kept kicking the can down the road and making excuses. Does it sound familiar to anybody? And it caught up to me. Caught up to me in my heart. Sleepless nights, agonizing days, boredom, anxiety, and discouragement, all the things, right? And I had to at some point go, all right, are you going to accept mediocrity? Are you going to just stay complacent? Are you going to stay stuck, stale, in a rut, whatever you want to say? Because on the other side of that decision to not stay stuck is a whole lot of unknowns, a whole lot of fear, a whole lot of doubt, having to swallow pride. So you're faced with this tough option, right? I'm comfortable. I got a good life. I'm not happy, though. If I dig and I begin to dream again and I map out a new path, yeah, that's going to be hard. Oh, by the way, I'm in my early 30s. Time is ticking. That's where I sat. And it was a process of 6 months of, and I don't think it should have taken that long, but I was wading into the water, so don't judge me. I was slowly wading out, and it took me about 6 months of self-discovery and looking at some threads in my life and looking through some past stories of my life and examining, well, what led me to go down this path, and then what caused that to no longer be the path? I had to confront that and dig deep. In other words, it was a deep dive of awareness of where my heart was, where my head was, where I was in my life, my financial situation, my family situation. I mean, I had to look at the whole thing. It was almost like, if you've ever cleaned out your garage before, you ever cleaned out your garage, guys are shaking their head. That's a process. And I have found that the best way to clean out a garage or a storage facility is to drag everything out. Drag it all out, take a look at it, and go, all right, what are we keeping? What are we throwing away? All right, if we're keeping it, where does it go? How should I organize it? How can we do this better? And that was the exercise, not having any theories, not having a whole lot of tools other than some advice of some executive coaches who I was friends with, and they gave me some of their tools and some of the things. And so I went through the hard work of self-discovery. So today I wanted you to hear that I have been where you are. It is agonizing. But if I can, I want to encourage you and equip you with just a few practical steps that you can take to determine your next best career move. Maybe the last move, meaning it is a movement. We are beginning to move. We are charting out on a new course. Now, can I just be fair and honest here? I didn't have the tools that I can offer you today. I didn't have what I have now is on the other side of this experience, and now I can coach you. I didn't have it. But I can tell you that I stumbled and bumbled and drug myself and crawled and ran and tripped all the way through what I'm about to teach you, which is first. You must ask yourself, am I clear on where I ultimately want to be? Now, we're talking professional, but this is a wonderful construct that can work for you in your personal life, spiritual life, physical life, emotional life. Am I clear on my mountaintop? And I love using the mountain as the analogy. Can I see out into the distance of my future life? And can I see a very clear mountaintop, a goal, a vision of that goal attained? Number two, you have to then say, after we determine this, by the way, these are the questions you must dig. By the way, these are not sometimes, very few times are these answerable in a quick moment. Am I clear on where I want to be? After I answer that, I must then say, what is it going to take to get there? What's it going to take? Experience, skill set, money, time, friends, connections. Once I figure out what it's going to take to get there, now I've assembled a list, if you will, of what I'm going to need. I can sit there and look at it and go, okay, in order to climb this mountain, this is what's going to have to take place. Third, who can help me? Who can help me climb the mountain? Who can help me get there? Who's the guide? Who are the compadres, right? Who are the soul sisters, right? Who's going to walk with me and climb, help me climb, whatever that looks like? Incidentally, when you begin to ask this question, who can help me get there? One of the things you're going to find is there may be some people in your life you need to cut out. It's true. It's a harsh reality. Because you get some people who will accidentally discourage you. They mean well, but they keep every time you're around them, they just keep making you doubt what you're doing. Next, fifth question, where do I start? What's the best place to start? There's no perfect place to start, but there's always a best place to start. Where do I start? I know the mountain I want to climb. I know what I got to do to climb it. I know who I want helping me along this journey, but now where do I start? What's that first step? Identify it and take it. And finally, the fifth question, how do I continue to advance up the mountain? What does advancing and climbing look like? What do I need to do to keep growing, keep training, keep getting more knowledge, more wisdom, more connections to keep moving up? This is from my journey. Now, I created a great tool for you, the Get Clear Assessment, that'll help you with question one. Am I clear on where I want to be? You can go to kencoleman.com, search the Get Clear Assessment. It's only $30. Take you 20 minutes, and it's going to begin to help you identify the mountain. The book From Paycheck to Purpose will walk you up the mountain, helping you answer many of those questions that I laid out for you today. But here's the deal. These questions, am I clear? What's it going to take to get there? Who can help me? Where do I start? And how do I move up? These are the questions you must ask and answer. Coming up, quiet quitting? It's not the new trend. We'll talk about the new one. Welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, of the people, by the people, for the people. I keeping you up to date, warning you, guiding you, coaching you, cheering you on. Quiet quitting has been quite the work trend, right? Everybody's talking about it. But a growing trend is now being called overemployment. In fact, there's a website, overemployed.com. And this is from an article from the CBC. It's a Canadian paper, but they reference a lady by the name of Mary, they're calling her, and she needed to offset the rising cost of living. And instead of working overtime, she thought, wait a second, what if I get a second full-time job in their field, in her field? And she and her partner both did this, and they didn't tell either boss about it. So this is a growing trend. We've actually talked about this on the program. And it's fascinating. In fact, you know what? I'm going to do something here. Throwing a curveball at Alex. I want to go to this website and just see what it says and what it looks like. You know, it just occurs to me. Overemployed.com. Now, I am not in any way endorsing this website. All right. And we're going to keep covering this. Okay. So this is the website, Alex. Overemployed.com. And right off the top, it says work two remote jobs, reach financial freedom. So it talks about his story. And I just wanted to see how this is. Boy, this is just straight up. Talks about the financial independence retire early movement, which they call FIRE. It's generally a job board. It's got some success stories, multiple remote jobs, how you do it. Okay, so I just wanted to take a look at it. All right, so the founder of this is a guy by the name of Isaac. He doesn't give out his last name. And he is a victim of what he thought, or he was going to be a victim of layoffs that were coming in 2020. So he started thinking about his exit plan. And I love that. If you feel like a storm is coming, prepare for the storm. We've talked about that many times on this program. So what happens is he several months trying to get a job, and he finally gets a job offer. But since he never got the layoff, he had been juggling both jobs, kind of thinking, I'm going to lose my first job, so I'm going to keep this second job going. And he figured out how to do it, keep it going. And so then he goes, well, why in the world would I quit it? So instead of the trend of quiet quitting, which is people engaging in just the bare minimum that's required, now you got people who are signing up for two jobs, the overemployed life, and they're moving closer towards burning the candle too close, right? And you know, moving towards the risk, at least, if not a guarantee, of burnout, right? There's a thriving community on Reddit that is also devoted to this movement. We actually showed a video recently, and I commented on a prominent YouTuber who documented his experience in getting caught working two jobs. And you can see that on our YouTube channel. And I don't know what, is that titled anything specifically, or they just search our channel? Guy gets caught working two remote jobs. You can see that, and I comment on it on our YouTube channel. Now, there aren't any exact numbers right now on this trend, but Anthony Lutenegger, boy, I hope I didn't butcher that too badly. He is also Canadian and head of business development at a technology company called Aragon Labs. And he said it's clearly a growing trend, especially in technology. He said the reason you're seeing it pop up more now, we're talking about two full-time jobs being held down by one person, is because of remote work. You couldn't do that as easily if you're in the office. And I think that that's pretty obvious. I guess I wouldn't put anything past anybody. But my hunch is that the only way you can pull this off is if you're fully remote. I don't know how in the world a company could be so incompetent, but here I say that, and it's possible, where somebody could be, I guess in a hybrid model, you might be able to pull it off too. But I think it's almost exclusively remote. So you're working two jobs. There are risks, and I think that you have to consider the risk. And then you have to also understand that what you're doing, it's unethical. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. And I don't want to be, you know, the school marm, you know, tisk tisk, you know, but, you know, they quote an employment lawyer in that article, plus a Fox Business article that I'm looking at, of saying, look, it may not be expressly written in your employee agreement, because some people are going, well, look, when I signed my contract, my employment agreement with the first company, it doesn't say anything in there that I can't hold down another full-time job. Okay, fair. But if you ever heard of the phrase, the spirit of the law, I mean, really? I mean, who really thinks that a normal, healthy leader and or leadership group of a company are fine with people pulling down or holding two full-time jobs? Now, I guess the only caveat to this is if you're working, you know, 80 hours and you are fulfilling what is required, but no one can do that for very long at all. You just can't hold that up. That schedule's not, it's just not sustainable. So let's just be honest. This is unethical. You're cheating on both companies. You're not telling them, you're withholding this. And listen, I will also recognize that very few people actually work a full 40-hour week. Okay, now people that are working overtime, I get it. But most people who are doing a traditional 40-hour week job, if you take your lunch hour and you take the amount of time that people waste during the day, which is probably somewhere between 90 minutes to 2 hours, you know, goofing off, talking, scrolling social media, you know, whatever. Smoke breaks, the whole nine yards. Do people still do smoke breaks? I think they do. Oh, I know they do, actually. There's a company in our office park, I shall not name them. But what's funny about it is they're in healthcare. And there's always these same ladies out smoking a cig every morning when I come in. I'm thinking to myself, do you want to go? Well, never mind. That's a rabbit trail. All right. What are the risks? What are the risks of this overemployment trend where you're working two full-time jobs? I read all the articles. There's not a whole lot of data on this. So we've got some common sense stuff here, just based on the anecdotes and the evidence that I'm seeing. I think there's three things. I think, and again, by the way, the umbrella that I just mentioned is a risk, but I just think this is unethical because I don't think it's right. And so this leads to what I think are the three risks because it's unethical. And I don't think it's healthy. First is a health issue. Multiple testimonies in these articles I reviewed for today's show said that quoted people that said that they were stressed out all the time and anxious because they were always worried that today's the day they get caught. I mean, who wants to live that way? I remember one time when I was a kid watching some bank robbery movie, and I'll never forget. I remember watching it going, man, that seems kind of cool. All that money would be great. But is the money worth it when you spend your entire life looking over your shoulder? Some of you are going, yeah, it is. I don't buy it. And so anxiety and stress from trying to hold down two jobs, please two leaders, two different customer bases, stress and anxiety is a major risk here and what it can do to you. Secondly is the next level, which is just the sheer amount of hours and work, and that the anxiety and the overworking and all that kind of stuff, presumably if you are overworking, it leads to burnout. And you're fried. You may have more money, but what did it cost you? Your mental, emotional, and physical health. It's not worth it. The third risk is getting fired twice. Nobody talks about that, except we showed in that YouTube video, both companies ended up fighting about each other. That could happen. Now you get fired twice. Who wants to put yourself at that kind of risk? It's not worth it. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Hey, if you're a business owner and you don't know your numbers, I hate to say it, but you don't know your business. And when markets are shifting, it's even more important. You've got to do everything you can to set yourself up for success. You don't have to be in the dark. Over 31,000 businesses, including our team here at Ramsey, know their numbers because they use NetSuite by Oracle, the number one cloud financial system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control of your financials, planning, budgeting, and inventory, so you can actually manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve your margins. Having everything in one place has saved our team hours each week since we made the switch to NetSuite. No more jumping between three or four different systems. We have quick access to what's going on in our business at all times. NetSuite is a game changer. So head to netsuite.com/Ken to get a product tour today. That's netsuite.com/Ken. nice, Joe. I feel like we got a little 80s sitcom feel going there.
Exactly.
We need a segment where we guess the genre of the bump. You know, like we all kind of go, what's this feel like today? Probably shouldn't be doing this right now, but it feels right. I know my kids, my teenagers would be embarrassed. They really would be. But, you know, it is what it is. I like it, Joe. All right. Let's get to the phones. We're going to continue to coach you up. Let's go to Zach, who's right here in our backyard, Nashville, Tennessee. Zach, how can I help?
Hi, how you doing today, Ken?
I'm living the dream. What are you doing?
I am trying to pursue it.
Good.
So I work in sports medicine.
Yeah.
I'm an athletic trainer. I've practiced in three different professional sports, two colleges, a high school. I was the director of a physical therapy company.
Okay.
And I've also worked in two clinical assistant positions with orthopedics groups. And I've tried every position that I can do in this field, and I'm trying to get out of it. Obviously, I moved to Nashville for a reason.
What makes you want to get out of it?
Honestly, I get bored at these jobs pretty quickly, and there's also a very low ceiling for the ways that I can advance and move up within the field.
Well, let me tell you something, pal. Those are two really good reasons. You're bored. You're bored, and you're capped. Right?
I mean, the job, it winds up being that I started athletic training in the first place because it was just something that kind of my parents thought that I would be good at.
That answers my next question. I want to know what led you into the field, and it feels like it was parental influence.
Yes. So I started college as a double major with history and theater, actually. And
Hold on. I know I'm doing a lot of interrupting, but it's on purpose.
No, I'm sorry.
No, you don't need to be sorry. I'm sorry I'm interrupting, but we got to stay right here.
Okay.
I want to know if there's something significant with choosing history and theater. Was that a direction that you were thinking about, or certainly a little bit more aligned with who you really are?
I was interested in becoming a history teacher because I knew it had some level of, I had really good history teachers and it had some level of a performance aspect to it,
yep,
which I enjoyed with my teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom has been a teacher for about 20 plus years. And when I asked her if she thought I should be a teacher, she told me after I'd already done a bunch of prereqs and stuff that, quote, candidly, I don't think you have the patience to be a teacher anyway.
Do you think she's right?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, so now. All right, so okay, so this is great. This is like when I was a kid. This is like the shrimp boat scene from Forrest Gump. You pull the big net up and we throw everything out except the shrimp. So we're going to throw all that stuff out and we're going to look at the word that I think is the key to this conversation and clarity.
Mm-hmm.
You said you were interested in being a history teacher because it was a form of performance. And I think you are a performer. I think you love performing. I think you love thinking about performing. I think anytime that the pressure's on you or some eyeballs are on you, you get what I call the juice. Am I right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Hey!
The whole reason I came to Nashville is to try and see if I have what it takes.
We've got a correct answer. So you came to Nashville to perform. In what way? What'd you want to perform when you first came to Nashville? What'd you want to do?
I'm a singer-songwriter.
There it is.
I play piano and I sing, yeah.
All right, now I got to ask the question, and there's really no way for me to comment on your answer, but I feel like I got to ask. Are you good?
My friends told me that they wouldn't have let me move here if they didn't think that I had a chance to make it in music. I just started to put my own stuff out, and I've been writing and I just started recording, but I've been writing and playing for about 2 years now.
All right, let me ask you a question again. Are you good?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, yeah.
If I put 200 people in a very intimate theater, and they were all there as my guests, and I said, just show up and sit there and shut up. And I got my guy, Zach, about ready to come out and perform. What's your confidence level on a scale of 1 to 10 that you could do a great job of entertaining those people who don't know you, don't know your music at all? What's your confidence level, 1 to 10?
I give that like a 6.
Okay.
200 is well over the biggest crowd. I've only ever played in bars and stuff before.
Forget about the number of people. I thought that was a small crowd. Forget about the people and being nervous. I'm saying you just get up there and you perform. Could you entertain them? And they walked out and said, Ken, this guy's good. Could you do it? Scale of 1 to 10, 1 being no, 10 being you better freaking believe it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think I would say 10, that I could entertain all those people.
Okay. So this is a toughie, man, because
I've been trying to use your proximity principle as much as I can. I work in Centennial Medical Park, and I walk across down to Broadway at least 2 to 3
times a week. How much money do you make in your current job?
Right now, about $54,000 is my salary.
Here's the question. This is the question that you must answer. What must be true for you to make $54,000 being in the music industry itself? I'm not talking as an artist. I mean, you are working on Music Row. You're working for a booking agency. You're doing something. You're working on a production crew. You are in the music business making $54,000. What must be true? You don't have to answer that on the air. That's the homework assignment. That's the proximity principle, which says, if you're new to the program, in order to do what Zach wants to do, you got to be around people that are doing it and in places where it is happening. Zach, it's really hard. It's really freaking hard to make it as a singer-songwriter in Poughkeepsie, much less Nashville.
Yeah.
Hey, Zach, it's really freaking hard to be 33 years of age with no training, no experience to become a national broadcaster. I did it. I know. I'm talking about me, Chachi. Oh. I was 33. I did it. And broadcasting is as hard, if not harder, than the music business to make it. I did it. It's why I wrote the proximity principle. You got to start hanging around people that are singer-songwriters, not just people that are like you that are hustling and grinding, but people that are actually doing it and winning big. If that means you got to freaking cut their grass, clean their pool, I'm dead serious.
Okay.
Hey.
I've been applying for jobs just to be a bar back downtown, and one bar downtown just gave me my first shot to come out and play for them.
That a boy. First thing, though, $54,000. Whether it's two jobs or one job, how do I make $54,000 so no interruption in income working in the music industry? That's the proximity principle.
That's also been a big problem for me with athletic training, is to try and actually get well past $54,000.
I get it, but we're not talking about $54,000. I'm just keeping your income where it is right now. Do you want to be a music artist or not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, then we're not worried about $54,000 and higher. We're worried about just staying where we are. I know I'm coming at you pretty fired up, but you got to get this, man. There's only one way this happens, and that's if you burn the ships. I'm all in. And I'm not worried about how much money I'm making as it relates to advancement in my financial world. I'm worried about just making the same amount I need to make right now, because at least I'm living right now. But you're already in an industry that you can't stand. You're bored. Your soul is seeping out of your body. And yet your heart knows and longs to do something very specific. And you're in the epicenter of it. My friend, it really is the proximity principle. But instead of reading about it now, you got to go do it. And so I want you to go make, if you can make 65, great. If you can make 75, great. If you can make 95, great. But it's not about that. It's about getting into the music industry. And the only way you're going to get in and get a shot is through relationships and opportunities where they know you for some other reason. They find you credible. They find you likable. And then they learn about you and they realize that you're talented. And then you got to be able to support yourself to the point where you can go gig for next to nothing. And you never know who walks into a bar one night and hears you tearing up the keys and they go, I want to meet that kid. There's no secret formula, folks. You just got to get after it. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Press on.
Thanks for listening to the Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following at Ken Coleman.